We're exploring a book of essays this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, thanks for being here. These essays really center around the myths that we conjure up about who we are and where we're from. It's a travel essays of sorts, taking us to places we know in Wisconsin, but we don't really know deep down. So one stop this hour is the Painted Forest. It's a beautifully muraled meeting house built in 1898. And it housed the secret meetings of the local chapter of the Modern Woodmen of America. Have you seen the Painted Forest in Belton? What do you think of it? What sense of belonging do you have to Wisconsin or an area of the state? We're at 800-642-1234. Krista Eastman's new book is called The Painted Forest. It's a collection of 9 essays exploring Wisconsin, the Midwest, and how we talk about place and identity. Krista, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much, Kate. I'm honored to be here.
Each word in your book is so deliberate in each essay, and they're placed just so beautifully, and they flow. Did you bear a burden as a writer, trying to see your home and your childhood in a different light with new words and new meanings?
I don't know if it was a burden so much as it's maybe just my own somewhat idiosyncratic perspective, just sort of always there. I grew up feeling deeply rooted in the county in which I lived. And as I got older, I came to realize that not everyone has that experience, and that I had somewhat of a story to tell that people don't always hear done very carefully or thoughtfully.
In what way did you feel like you had to be very careful and thoughtful about rural Wisconsin?
Well, you know, so when I was a bit younger, I lived abroad quite a bit and traveled. And so I had this interesting experience where I was encountering the real behind the imagined in the places that I was visiting. So where I was living in France and in Antarctica. And at the same time, I was also having to present myself to others as someone from Wisconsin, someone from rural Wisconsin, and sort of see in their eyes who they thought that I might be. So I think that got me real preoccupied with myth and place and with identity. So I had a ton of practice talking to people about where I was from. And, you know, you step outside of Wisconsin or outside of the Midwest and you learn very quickly that this is a place that is often caricatured and stereotyped, and people don't have, you know, something beyond a two-dimensional understanding.
So cheese,
of the place.
Packers.
Yes.
I mean, what were those exchanges like when you were in France or Antarctica?
It's hard because I feel like for a while I was sort of operating as an unpaid ambassador, you know, and I would get like, you know, at a party with a couple drinks and just like get really enthusiastic about cheese or something, you know, but I was also uncomfortable with it at the same time because I don't represent Wisconsin. There's no one Wisconsin culture. And then also at the same time, I am from a small town. It was formerly known as the butter capital of the world.
That's Reedsburg.
That's Reedsburg, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Reedsburg. And so then the added layer of complication was just that I also, in a lot of ways, fulfilled people's ideas about people from Wisconsin. You know, mm-hmm. So it was like my father. He's an auto body mechanic, retired now, but for most of my childhood with my grandfather, he owned a milk truck, and he was on milk route every day taking the milk from the farm to the factory. So so it was an interesting experience because I had the connections that people expected me to have, but I was not talking about things the way that maybe they would have expected me to.
Krista Eastman is the author of the new book, The Painted Forest. It's a collection of 9 essays that explore Wisconsin and the Midwest and really how we talk about place and identity. You can join in. What do you think people get wrong when they think about Wisconsin or the Midwest? What are your experiences traveling outside Wisconsin and coming back? Have you been that ambassador before, that informal ambassador? What did you notice? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas@wpr.org. So, Krista, at the very beginning of your book, you talk about your family driving past Dr. Evermore's sculpture park in North Freedom.
Yes.
No one says anything about it, and there's a bit of tension there. What's the tension about?
I think that, Dr. Evermore's sculptures are art, but they're also really unexpected. So, you know, they're coming from a space and a place where maybe art is not supposed to spring, right? Like on Highway 12, right next to the Badger Ammunition Plant, which at that time was there. That is not like a space where you're supposed to encounter art, right? Capital A. So I think that is part of it. And then maybe also some discomfort with like what Dr. Evermore does is, you know, he was so brazen and bold in putting his vision out there. And that's like a huge risk, right? And risks embarrassing oneself or being different, right? And I think that is also somewhat a part of that reaction in the book to this art being in this strange place and also just being so big and bold and brazen and different.
And it's these oddities, though, that you really love to crystallize on through your writing. You kind of seek out these odd things and then see them in a different light. What is that like?
Well, I don't have much control over it. I think for me, it's a part of really believing or wanting to believe, at least, that every place is really interesting. And that every place has really substantive things that we can sort of unravel. And those things may appear really bizarre or strange at the outset. But I think I have somewhat of this impulse to find these strange things in overlooked places and not to make them just sound, be super weird and be like, oh, Wisconsin is so weird. But to really sort of take them on their own terms.
So it sounds like generalizations are your worst enemy.
I guess so, yeah. That's what they'll have to put on my tombstone.
I wonder, did being away from Wisconsin and dropping in and dropping out of places in other areas of the U.S. and the world, living and working in other places, did that help you give permission to write about Wisconsin in different ways?
I think it definitely did. I when I first went abroad after college and was working, I was writing a lot in a journal because I knew no one and was super lonely. And so I had just an abundance of free time. And so I was writing a lot and reading a lot. And I think I was also, so I was writing about the places where I was. And I was also, I think, mustering up the courage to actually be a writer seriously and to really try to do it because there are so many reasons not to. And so I was first writing, and when I first came home, I was writing about some of the experiences that I had there. And then I think I just kind of trained that eye back onto Wisconsin.
We're exploring a book of essays. It's called The Painted Forest by Krista Eastman. How do you see the contrast between the town you knew as a kid versus how that community is today? Do you have a deep love for a place in Wisconsin? Where is it and why? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Email ideas@wpr.org. Back with Krista Eastman in just a moment. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. we're spending the hour on a new book called The Painted Forest. We're exploring the meaning of home in Wisconsin here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Krista Eastman started asking herself what it means to be from Wisconsin, what it means to be from the Midwest, or from any place at all, for that matter. And then what does it mean to leave your home or to return? And she attempts to find some answers through 9 essays. Maybe you've had these questions on your mind. Where do you belong? Are you returning to your hometown at the holidays? How do you see it today compared to when you were a child? Join in 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. And author Krista Eastman stays with us. Krista, you worked at the Dells from about the age of 14 to age 22. And at one point, you were a tour guide on a boat in the Upper Dells. You worked with a captain who often said, "This place is funny."
Yes.
Could you read an excerpt from that last paragraph of your essay, Wonder Spot, that follows this observation of being funny?
Sure. This was a common refrain for a lot of people I worked with, and I most remember it being said by Captain Crisoma, who is the captain referred to in the essay. And I'll just start reading now. "And perhaps what he means is that on the banks of this river, in this occult and commercial town, the act of beckoning crowds to this spot, promising the mere possibility of escape, has very often been enough. What he could also mean is this: the true attraction comes on our penniless day of departure, when crowds finally head home in lines and in silence, their desires still whole but behind them, tangled into the wonder spot's attempt to eddy and alter into all this gaudiness, all that mercy."
You have the depiction of the Dells there and some of the natural wonder colliding with the reality of the lines. What do you think the true attraction is when the crowds leave and it's quiet?
Oh, so the thing is that now the crowds don't really leave because it's an all-year destination.
And so true.
Do feel some nostalgia for when I was younger and when the crowds did leave and it was just like 6 locals in the bar, it was like such a wonderful feeling. But one thing that I think is appealing about it, and which still makes me honestly miss the experience of working on the river, is the seasonal aspect of it. And each season is sort of like this amazing show where there's the old standby reliable cast of characters, and then there's some new cast of characters that come in, and some people stay for a while and some people don't. And the ones that leave are still woven into stories and talked about 15 years later, probably some of them much to their chagrin if they knew. There's community and there's a seasonality to it.
And you kept these cast of characters close to you for many years before you could write about them.
Yeah, I think that it was destined that I was going to have to write about the Dells because I had a long, I had a long experience there. Even as a kid, I was watching it grow and going to the water park on A Day if I was, if I had gotten an A. So I think it's such a complicated and such a fascinating place that no writer would probably ever be able to leave that material on the table. And also, I'm driven in my writing to write because I'm trying to make sense of something. I really don't have it figured out. There's not something in my pocket before I start. And so it's also a means of writing it was me trying to make sense of that time and of that place.
You mentioned earlier that the Midwest is kind of this overly caricatured place. How do you see people engage with this idea of what the Midwest is, and how do you figure that out as a writer?
People outside of the Midwest, or
both outside of the Midwest and for us who live here?
Yeah. I think I have a kind of a strange essay in this collection called Middle West, and in that one I'm kind of playing with what is this thing, the Midwest, and is it anything at all, really? And kind of talking about the extent to which a lot of boundaries are imagined and made up. And so I almost fall a little bit on that side of things where I almost feel like there is this thing called the Midwest, and it's a specific number of states, right? It doesn't include Montana. Texas is not a Midwestern state. These places are really different. So on the one hand, I think that. And on the other hand, I think what you have are like individual towns and, you know, individual micro regions within the region, and that the Midwest is just kind of an unfortunate catch-all.
We're talking with Krista Eastman. Her new book is called The Painted Forest. It's a collection of essays exploring Wisconsin and the Midwest and how we look at it all. Join in the conversation. What do people say when you tell them that you're from Wisconsin? Do you launch into politics or your accent or perhaps Midwest stereotypes? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Krista, there's this moment in the book where you point to a police blotter kind of snippet written by someone at the Boston Globe, and it seems to be poking fun at the fact that police cited a Fond du Lac man for blasting John Denver's music too loudly.
Yes, yeah.
What's going on there?
Who hasn't done that, you know? Yeah, so I felt like this. There's a much more contemporary phenomenon of this called Florida Man. And you'll see where the press will zero in on some crazy thing that some man in Florida did. And then it becomes this, oh, Florida, oh, Florida Man. Well, the interesting flip side to Florida Man is that Florida has apparently really robust open records requests and public information is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. So Florida Man exists everywhere. You know, there's people doing ridiculous things in every state in this country. But Florida Man becomes like the mythic Florida Man, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's what's happening in this Boston Globe thing. You know, it was like this really tiny snippet. And with, you know, and it was hard to imagine how you were supposed to read it as something other than a punchline. You know,
you're thinking, I can do something with this.
Yeah. Yeah. And I thought, well, this is how this works, right? There's so much happening around the edges of this where I say that it's kind of like willing this sort of myth to just kind of bubble up around the sides that is readily accessible to people that might not be founded in reality.
You know, here we are in the lead up to the 2020 election, Wisconsin being such a spotlight, such a battleground state. How do you see the Midwest characterized and Wisconsin in the political narrative? And where do you go with that in your writing?
I haven't really broached that in my writing, maybe because it's too hot of a topic for me, but I find it to be really annoying. I think that that's probably not surprising, given the trajectory of this interview. But one thing that really has annoyed me in the way that things are talked about post-Trump's election are the way in which the Midwest as an adjective is just kind of thrown around, right? Really loosely. So oftentimes it's kind of a stand-in for white middle-class people. And then that's what the press is really sort of talking about. And you get all of these, you know, interviews with people in diners and, you know, white men in diners, right? In the working class towns and things like that.
And journalists parachute in, parachute out.
Exactly. Yeah. And of course, you know, for people who live here, we know that not everyone who lives here is white working class, right? And that that's not the definitive experience of being here or of being a Wisconsinite. So I think it's I think a lot of it has been pretty fairly shallow.
You kind of watching and waiting and figuring out where you might take that as a writer, or if you'd ever even write.
It's interesting. I don't know. I don't know if I would or not, but I do remember during the midterm elections, I was on the New York Times, and here was this sort of lovely aerial photo of the countryside around Reedsburg, Wisconsin, with an Amish cart, you know, going down the street. And I thought, this looks familiar. And I read the caption, and it was like, you know, doing its election coverage. And it was just one of those moments where it was like, oh, yes, there's an election. Suddenly people have some sort of at least professed interest in where I live, even though, it, like you said, it is parachute in and parachute out so often.
9 essays. It's a portrait of placemaking and belonging, little pieces in Wisconsin getting the spotlight in Krista Eastman's new book called The Painted Forest. What do people say when you tell them you're from Wisconsin? Do they ask about cheese or beer? Join in 800-642-1234. Back with Krista Eastman after this news update here on the Ideas Network.
Thank God I'm a country boy. Well, I got me a fine wife. I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on the riddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy.
Right now, though, we're spending the hour with the new book called The Painted Forest. It's a portrait of the Midwest, a portrait of Wisconsin. We've been getting glimpses of the Dells. We're going to talk about a far-flung station in Antarctica. We're going to talk about imaginative murals covering every inch of a fraternal society lodge in Velton, Sauk County. Krista Eastman writes, in the end, the forest is alive with tensions. Where do you find peace and belonging to a place in Wisconsin? Where do you find tensions in your homeland? Join in at any point this hour, 800-642-1234. And essayist Krista Eastman stays with us. Krista, you talk about the Isle Filippo, which is this island that once was thought to exist in Lake Superior. You examine why it might have appeared on maps or for almost a century. What are some of those theories, and why did you like this geographic place to write about?
Oh, well, I love islands. And so the prospect of an island that actually didn't exist is even more interesting. This was not an island, but this was an island in that was drawn onto early maps of the Great Lakes and of Lake Superior. And I should have reread the essay to bone up on the dates, but in the 1700s. So this was a time when French explorers were trying to sort of figure out where things were. And they made this error in cartography and added an island that doesn't exist. Not too far from where Isle Royale is now. So it was probably just, you know, cartographical error. There was a lot of, the people who drew the maps were, oftentimes not the people who actually had done the quote unquote exploring. But you know, there was also people trying to make a name for themselves who were, you know, sort of prospecting around Lake Superior, trying to find copper deposits. And I sort of wryly suggest that the guy who was doing that was in need of more place names, right? Because he's sort of littering the Lake Superior with, you know, the place name, with the names of his bosses or other people in power who have the ability to help him. So
who can help him also with a paycheck.
Right. Yes. It's like, I found this island and I've named it after you.
So, Krista, how did you go about, you know, finding that history and researching? Because researching is also, as you weave in your own narrative, a big part of what you're trying to write here in these essays.
Gosh, I cannot remember how I came upon that one. I cannot remember.
You weren't in a dark, dungy basement somewhere?
Well, I do. I do that. So that is fair. You can picture me there. That's not inaccurate. I can't remember if I was just online, digging around in archives, but I came up with that. I thought that was really interesting and sort of held on to it. And then I think I came upon the John Denver thing and then somehow realized that they were going to be a part of the same essay. So
let's hear some more words. You reading this passage from the essay called Insider's Almanac, exploring how we define being from a place and what that means to belong. Can you set that up for us? It's page 25.
Sure. Another way to share your home is to leave it with due care, pushing off from your provenance, whether on foot or on thought. To pack a bag with some food, blankets, and a compass, use the bathroom one last time. To announce what everyone gathered long ago, that your affiliations, though deeply felt, are like the land itself, cultivated, contested, grown from contradiction and tilled by circumstance, by the muscle of the people you knew, by the beating hearts of those who sought and then succeeded in feeding you. Once you've made this final admission, you can release the weary guests who might remain by leading them across the porch, past the garden, back around the thick-seeming mound of Sauk County. You can continue to walk them well past the county line, past Leopold's shack, past any number of county lines, while braving highway tunnels and crossing rivers, while considering the sweat that collects on every shoulder blade.
The flow there, it is so gorgeous.
Well, thank you.
Your writing. And then Eldo Leopold making a little visit in your book.
Yes.
What was that like to write about Leopold?
Oh, it was great. I mean, his legacy in this state is so tremendous. And it was also a little bit funny and perverse on my part, too, because I was wanting to write about Sauk County. And of course, someone has already written very beautifully about Sauk County and is really well known for doing it. And so I used it, I sort of used Leopold as a vehicle for thinking about how there's different kinds of local knowledge. So we do this thing, at least at places like Madison, where we really prize the local, and everything is about local, 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 and local is better. And I wanted in that essay to explore the idea that local means different things to different people.
In what ways?
You know, it's hard to kind of explain. Let me think about it. It's not, local isn't necessarily always tied with like a politically progressive, ideology, right? Mm. There's different kinds of local. We can also be so embedded in our communities too, that we become insular to a fault or, uninterested in, you know, consuming new information or that kind of thing. So it's kind of like when you're from a small town, right? And anyone from a small town can tell you there are advantages and disadvantages to being from a small town. It's not so simple.
Krista Eastman is the author of the new book, The Painted Forest. It's this collection of essays exploring the mysteries of Wisconsin and the Midwest. Join in 800-642-1234. Where do you feel at home in Wisconsin? Do you feel like a true Wisconsinite in the woods or in your cabin, in your office, maybe in a tavern? Where do you find a sense of belonging? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Krista, it's time to take a trip to the Painted Forest.
Oh, boy.
I know. Are you ready?
I am. I'm ready.
So this is a 19th century lodge building in Sauk County that housed a fraternal life insurance society.
Yes.
What is this Fraternal Life Insurance Society?
It's the Modern Woodmen of America, and it was a part of this zest for fraternalism that happened around the turn of the century. People are more familiar perhaps with the Masons or the Knights of Columbus, if you're Catholic. So those are all still existing kind of relics of this era, and during which people, men across the socioeconomic spectrum and across ethnic and racial groups in the U.S. were joining fraternal societies.
Okay, so we're in Velton, Wisconsin, which is just this little tiny community.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. this lodge has lots of murals on the wall. What is there?
So it's really interesting. It's a full, like, painted environment. So it is painted from floor all the way to the ceiling. The ceiling is a beautiful blue sky with clouds. So you walk in and, you know, it's a full immersion. And then as you walk sort of through it, looking from left to right, as if you were reading, you know, reading the murals are actually telling this, you know, telling the story of kind of the woodman version of events of the world, or like their sort of initiation process and, you know, their payoff at the end once you've been initiated.
What attraction did this building have to you in creating your story and then naming your book, The Painted Forest?
Yeah, so there was a local woman in Velton who's since passed away named Dolores Nash, and she was the person who, you know, I talked to her on the phone, and she said that the Painted Forest in the 60s, someone was going to sell it and turn it into a garage, or I think she said a machine shed. And she said she and her husband left their breakfast dishes warm on the kitchen table, and they went out and they bought it to save it from that happening. And I think prior to that, it was known locally as Woodman Hall. That's what they referred to it as. But I think Dolores was kind of a poetic person, kind of a creative soul. And so after she bought it and they kept it open for community events, she began calling it the Painted Forest. And so I was, you know, trying to figure out what to call the book. And I just thought that the Painted Forest was a nice title, and that it also, as an idea, kind of extends to also touch on some of the other essays as well.
We're talking with Krista Eastman. We're on a journey here. Her new book is A Painted Forest, this tender little book of essays that question the idea of belonging to a place. Especially this time of year, do you find a place where you belong? Where in Wisconsin is true to you? Have you found home? What do you think people get wrong when they think about Wisconsin or the Midwest? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in a moment. More with Krista Eastman right here on the Ideas Network. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're exploring these little gems, these hidden places and stories of Wisconsin we may or may not be familiar with. We're spending the hour with 9 essays by Krista Eastman. Her new book is called The Painted Forest, and she leaves us in Antarctica. She writes, "There is deep possibility in the blindness of a place belonging to no one. Here, there are myths to be scrapped and then replaced by your own." Are you headed homeward soon or to someone else's true north? What feelings do you have toward where you're from and where you belong? We're at 800-642-1234, and Krista Eastman stays with us. Let's go to the phones now. Dan is joining us from Drummond this morning. Hi, Dan.
Hello. Now, in the summertime when we have visitors, they ask me, what do you do in the winter? Mm-hmm. Well, in the wintertime, one of the things we do is look forward to President's Weekend in February, because the local snowmobile club puts on a thing called the German Barstool Races.
Oh, and my goodness.
what that basically is you put a barstool on a pair of skis and go down a hill.
Oh, my.
There have been some very unique innovations. They had one where they had a sports car on skis go down that hill.
Wow.
And it's just the most awesome thing ever for a small community.
I bet, Dan, you've seen some really odd things go down that hill. And Krista, it's those oddities that you really love.
It's true. I would like to come. You're in Drummond. I'm coming. You said February?
In February on President's Weekend.
Oh, that sounds great.
It's a date. All right. Dan, thank you so much for calling in. Krista, before we go on to Antarctica, I want to spend just another moment on the Painted Forest. And if you could tell us a little bit about who made these murals, Ernest Hopeden.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. That, should I mention that? Yeah, so the murals were painted by a man named Ernest Hopeden, who locally was described as the bum painter. So this was a man who had fled Prussia and took, I think, 20 years to walk from New York State before he ended up in the Wisconsin area. And what he would do is he would paint things in exchange for room and board. So the State Historical Society holds some of the things that he painted on. Some of the things haven't lasted that long because he was often painting for like farming communities, and he would paint on whatever. You know, he'd paint on wood or he'd paint on canvas, things like that. And he would do portraits of people's homesteads. In a lot of ways, it kind of reminded me of those photos that were really popular, I think in like the 80s, where planes would fly over people's farms and take aerial view shots of the farms. And then those photos were, you know, displayed with great pride and farmhouses around Wisconsin. And so I think it was somewhat of a similar thing where they're often, you know, kind of portraying the farms as these beautiful, you know, prosperous places. He's got some landscapes of the Driftless that are really beautiful rolling hills. And so what happened is he at some point walked into Velton and they asked him to paint the Painted Forest, which must have been a huge gig for him because it was a ton of, you know, square footage. Yeah. And so he was, they lodged him there and he completed it and then moved on.
And you write he's buried in a pauper's grave.
Yes. Yeah. He, you know, from all accounts, it seems that he was probably an alcoholic, but a very kind man and an educated one, someone who was really curious and interested in reading books. So I love to think about the things, those little snippets of who he was that still sort of survive, you know, survived in the oral history record and now, which, you know, actual art historians have committed to memory, hopefully.
So from the Painted Forest all the way to Antarctica, this last essay, it's like you get a little bit of whiplash as a reader. Like, wait, where are we? How did we get here?
Yeah. They both can be cold, but that might be where the similarities end.
How did you land in Antarctica?
Oh, it's such a ridiculous story. I was living in Madison, and I was in my 20s. I was never really too committed to staying in any one place. I was really interested in living and being abroad and working abroad. And I was talking to my friend Bill Scanlon, and we somehow Antarctica came up, and he made me realize that there were people living there. Because prior to that, I had imagined it as just totally empty. And so this like big light bulb went off in my head, and I got on the interweb. Mm-hmm. Which I call, in the essay, I call it the navigational devices of our time. and started Googling and realized that this large military subcontractor, Raytheon at the time, you know, does all of the contracting for the labor, kind of the laboring staff and the tradespeople staff who are down in Antarctica at the stations, just keeping those stations running so that the scientists can come in and do their research. So it was very unlikely beginning, but I just did one of those applications online where you just like throw something into the ether and you assume you will never hear from anyone ever again about it. And then lo and behold, I got a phone call and got a phone interview and got the worst job on station. So
what was that job?
Congratulations. I started off working in the kitchen, which was 6 days a week, 9 or 10 hour days, wearing elastic band pants and no slip shoes and a hat and doing a ton of dishes and pot scrubbing. So
German film director Werner Herzog like just makes this cameo in that essay, like out of nowhere, which is a bit surreal because he was making this documentary at like in 2007
right.
of Antarctica.
Encounters. He made Encounters at the End of the World, and he made it while I was there.
Okay.
Yeah, it is such a fascinating place. You know, everyone there is really interesting. It's a lot of young people, but then there's also a lot of more middle-aged folks. A lot of people who do come from the upper Midwest or Alaska, people who come from cold weather places, but it's an eccentric cast of characters. Like people who end up down there are charting their own destiny. You know, they're sort of doing their own thing and they're traveling in the off season. And so in some ways, like having Werner Herzog show up was like, oh, okay. You know, him and everyone else, you know, everyone was really starstruck and it was really funny to just have him like going through the cafeteria line, you know, picking out his food or his Jell-O or whatever. He was down there. I think he had gotten a grant from the Artists and Writers Program. And he was there with a cinematographer, and they made this movie about Antarctica. And he came boasting that he was not going to film a single penguin. Because that was like what everybody does. And I think he actually saw penguins and changed his mind, but I think they did make it into the movie. But, you know, it's a cast of characters down there, and he's known for being drawn to those types of people. So I think in many ways it was sort of a good marriage.
Krista, thank you for sharing your cast of characters with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Krista Eastman is a Madison-based essayist. She's the author of the new book, The Painted Forest. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.